Welcome back to another episode of Comic Obscura Showcase. I'm your host, Tony. In this podcast, I dig up obscure comic book characters and series and give them a bit of history and a pitch for a relaunch to give them a taste of the spotlight. You may have noticed the logo and name change. There was another Comic Obscura pod, so I changed the name of mine. Figured that'd be easier. I think it still works since this show does indeed showcase obscure comic stuff. So as the entertainment industry is kind of a mess with a lot of projects on hold due to the state of the world right now, last episode I talked about Black Panther 2 and how the use of the obscure Marvel villain Living Laser could help with the power balance issue with the MCU Black Panther. This episode, there's another franchise that's also kind of on hold that I think should be either dropped or just altered into something else. Something, in my opinion, would probably be way cooler. And it feels like they're basically making this anyway, although they should have made it like two movies ago. I think you'll catch on once we get into it. So today, I'm doing a series instead of just a singular character. And that series is the world of Xenozoic Tales, or as it's more colloquially known, Cadillacs and Dinosaurs. Alright, so let's start with the history. This was created by Mark Schultz in 1986 and started as a story called Xenozoic for the horror comic anthology Death Rattle in their 8th issue. This was followed up by Xenozoic Tales number 1 in February of 1987, under Kitchen Sink Press. The series ran for 14 issues, but ended in the middle of a story arc. Later in 1990, the Marvel Comics imprint of Epic Comics reprinted Xenozoic Tales in color under the name Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, and with all new covers from the original issues, but the reprints only went up to issue 6 and stopped in 1991. Then, in 1994, Topps Comics started their own continuation of the original series, Xenozoic Tales, but under the name Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, which, let's be honest, was the catchier name. That lasted for 1 year and produced 9 issues. Creator Mike Schultz acted as a consultant on some of the stories. The series saw enough popularity that it got an animated series, a video game for Sega CD, an arcade game from Capcom, action figures, candy bars, and a role-playing game. Fun fact, the title Cadillacs and Dinosaurs is a trademark owned by General Motors, who licensed it out for use to comics, games, cartoons, etc. The series literally had Cadillacs in it based on real ones. Lastly, there's another publisher called Flesk, F-L-E-S-K, Publications, that technically never printed a Cadillacs and Dinosaurs comic, but they did print Mark Schultz's Storms at Sea in 2015. This illustrated novella provided some backstory on how the world of Xenozoic Tales came to be. So now that we've looked a little bit at the history, which I know I'm trying to keep the history parts a little bit more brief, you know, just so, because they could go on and on depending on like what the subject is. So I'm trying to like, you know, make it a little bit more concise. That's a little bit of the history. So what is Xenozoic Tales exactly? It's a post-apocalyptic Earth, thrashed by natural disasters and pollution. Humans have gone underground for 400 years, living in subterranean cities, and then finally they reemerge to the surface, and humanity finds the world populated by dinosaurs and other previously extinct creatures. Technology is scarce, and those with mechanical skills are in high demand and garner massive respect and influence in this new era. This is, like I said, this one is mainly about the world, but there are characters in it. The series has stories of various characters that expand the lore and the world, but it does have two main characters, basically, in Jack Tenrick and Hannah Dundee. Jack Tenrick is a mechanic running his own garage. He's called an old blood, which are people who repair machines from before the event that forced humanity underground. The people of the city in the sea, formerly known as Manhattan, hold him in higher regard than their actual governors. The series starts with him and Hannah Dundee in a relationship. Hannah is a scientist and ambassador from Wasoon, aka Washington, D.C., who went to the city in the sea to build relations between the two cities. She falls in love with Jack and, you know, adventures ensue. There's another character named Hermes, which is actually an Allosaurus raised by Jack that acts as a guard dog. It's gentle with Jack and Hannah, but vicious with most other people. There's Mustafa Cairo and Kirgo, K-I-R-G-O. They're friends with Jack and they're also fellow mechanics. There's the Taroons, which is a family of poachers who are enemies to Jack. They're three brothers, Hammer, the oldest, Wrench, the second oldest, and Vice, the youngest. There's Wilhelmina? I'm not sure how to pronounce that. It's like Wilhelm I with I-N-A, Wilhelmina. Scharnhorst? Oh man, what a weird name. It's like S-C-H-A-R-N-H-O-R-S-T. Anyway, this person leads a group called the Moles, who reside in the C-I-T-S. The cities in the sea. And she, yeah, I forgot I tried to make that shorter, but I actually made it longer because I had to read it out because I forgot what that was shorthand for. And she hates old bloods and believes, for some reason, that they stand in the way of progress, despite them clearly being very important to the future of humanity. There's the Grith, which is a race of lizard men who can talk to dinosaurs telepathically, and they're allies to Jack. They can't speak human language, so they use letter tiles to communicate, like from Scrabble, the game Scrabble. And there's other characters and stuff in this world, but you know, I think these are like the main important ones as far as like if you want to consider main characters. But I do want to talk about some of the dinosaurs. Now in this world, the dinosaurs have nicknames because, you know, they've been dinosaurs haven't existed for centuries, and then suddenly there's a massive like apocalyptic event that drives humanity underground, and then when they come back up, there's dinosaurs. So you figure, you know, they're gonna start calling them different things, because like no one's been thinking about T-Rexes and stuff for like 500 years, and then even before that. So you know, they're just like, let's just make up new names. So you got a slither, which is just a general term for dinosaur, which I kind of didn't get, because like most dinosaurs are at least two-legged, like they don't slither at all, but you know, whatever. You got Cutter, which is the nickname for an Allosaurus. Cave Bear, which is what it sounds like. Cog Spider, which is a giant daddy long leg spider. Hornbill, which is a Parasaurolophus. I can't pronounce that. It's a peaceful herd dino. Horses, yep, still got horses. You got a Mac, which is a general term for Ceratops dinosaurs or Styracosaurus. You got Big Wooly or Tusker, which are mammoths. Sambuck, which is an Apatosaurus. Sailback, which is a general term for a Dimetrodons. Shark, which is, you know, it's a giant shark. Shavat, which is the term for T-Rexes, which apparently there's regular T-Rexes and then mutated T-Rexes that have optic camo, and apparently their cojones are in high demand on the black market for some reason. I have no idea what they're doing with those, but apparently they're valuable in this world. And then there's the Shrike, which is a Deinonychus. Oh boy, I can't pronounce any of these. Thresher, a Triton, and a Wahochuck, which is a nickname for a Stegosaurus. And Zeke, which is a nickname for a Pterodon. Yeah, I totally botched those. I should have tried to read some of the real dinosaur names before that. Because, like, yeah, it's no wonder they came up with these nicknames. Because they're like, yeah, I can't pronounce that crap. We'll just call Stegosaurus a Wahochuck and a Tyrannosaurus Rex a Shavat. Yeah, I get it. It kind of makes sense that they would just be like, yeah, let's give them nicknames because freaks ain't. It's like, run! There's a Deinonychus coming at it. It's like, nah, we'll just call him a Shrike. So some of the nicknames seem odd, but yeah, I think it makes sense having tried to pronounce some of the actual dinosaur names, but it also kind of adds a uniqueness to the world building in the story. So that's the source material. So let's get to the pitch. So what can be done with it today? Well, it's kind of simple, actually. First, you bring production of any future Jurassic Park or world movies to a grinding halt, which, you know, sorry, ironically, that's already happened. Next, you get the license to the name Cadillacs and Dinosaurs for a movie, and you make what is essentially, let's call it, Fast and the Furious meets the Lost World in the Mad Max universe, sort of. I guess there'd be more trees and stuff because it's not a desert, but you kind of get what I'm going for here. So you have your two leads in Jack and Hannah, and their story kind of helps bring audiences into the world because, you know, you're going to need like human characters in there somewhere. And you can start out your franchise or your movie series, whatever, with those two, and they're your lead in. And as far as the world goes, like I said before, with the slang terms for dinosaurs, that kind of gives it a lived-in feel, because regular people aren't going to learn all the scientific names for dinosaurs, so of course it'd be like shorthand names. Although I feel like T-Rex would never go out of style. That's about as shorthand as you can get, but you know, whatever, let's leave it what it is. Anyway, so I think following the basic beats of the comic in the first movie, at least, would be ideal. Now, from there on, you could take a more Fast and Furious route and do, like, spin-offs with other characters, whether from the comics or made up. And you can introduce new dinosaurs, since this world makes it clear that there are mutations out there, so you're not limited to just real dinosaurs. And then there's even mutated ones of T-Rexes, so you could go nuts with like mixing and matching monsters and dinosaurs or whatever. Like, you could kind of, you're kind of unlimited to what kind of creatures they could run into out there. And you could also risk a TV series, but it better have a pretty damn big budget. Or I guess you could make it an anthology TV series, so you don't have this, like, the episodes are random, like they don't all have to have a dinosaur in it, I guess, but still it's probably gonna need a pretty big budget. So I feel like a movie is the best place for this kind of thing. With movies, it would be best to do a trilogy at most, using the comic for reference and then doing brand new characters after your first movie, because you don't have, I mean, I guess you could lock in two people to play Jack and Hannah and just, you know, do a trilogy about those two for the start, and after that trilogy is done, then you could do other characters, like made up ones or whatever, and just like go nuts with the world. I guess that'd be up to the creative team. And of course you gotta use actual Cadillacs, not just caddies, but classic caddies. This series is about two things: giant lizards, dinosaurs, and basically just Cadillac car porn. And it's at its highest mixed with like fast-paced chases and kind of like I guess Jurassic Park 1 didn't really have high-speed chase. It had like the one like driving chase scene, really, but imagine that scene from Jurassic Park 1 with the T-Rex chasing them in a Jeep, but instead of a Jeep they're in a Cadillac, and it could take place during night, during the day, and they're just like zooming around at rocket launchers and whatever other weapons they could slap together, trying to like fight off dinosaurs and just like going like hunt like over 100 miles an hour, zipping through, I don't know, desert, through jungle, or whatever terrain you want to throw them in. And visually, like, I would love it to have a similar look to Mad Max Fury Road, with like just the bold bright colors, and just essentially the movie would be a long car chase but with dinosaurs in it. Obviously, I guess, don't forget that, you know, this world is dealing with this world's been dealing with dinosaurs for a long enough time that there are poachers in it. So, people who hunt and track even like T-Rexes for their testicles, again, for whatever reason. So, you know, there should be at least one great action sequence of a successful dinosaur hunt. Like, I guess that's your intro to the bad guys, which I guess would be the poachers. Those, the three brothers from earlier, they're poachers, so I guess they are bad guys. But whatever, you know, that's how you introduce those guys. Show them successfully doing the thing that they're supposed to be good at. And it would be cool just to show the audience, like, you know, there are people who can do this. Like, they don't suck at it. They're not just like, oh yeah, I'm a dinosaur poacher, I lose like 15 guys every time. It's like, no, we know what we're doing. We've, you know, after humanity reemerged and found out that they're dinosaurs, some years later, they eventually figured out how to successfully track, hunt, and, you know, kill dinosaurs and steal their balls for for sale. Yeah, so I'm not really sure who would be a good fit for director for this. Before his disappearance, after making all the money, and it feels like something that Michael Bay would have a hand in, you know. I'm not saying I want him to do it, just that it seems like something he'd try to get his hands on. Though he'd probably try to cram a lot more military boardroom scenes and slow-mo chopper shots into it. This is essentially what the Lost World movies are leading to, but the next one won't be anywhere near as awesome as this, I feel. Like, this series is what Jurassic Park should have already been, like I said, two movies ago. Hell, let's get Jeff Goldblum in on this. He'd be great in this one. Get some of the Fast and the Furious stars in here, make the movie a little self-aware. The main character, Jack, is basically Chris Pratt's character from The Lost World. I'm trying to think who else would be a good lead as Jack. I mean, I guess you could grab any one of the Hollywood Chrises and throw them into it. I guess, like I said, there's you could get maybe, I don't want to say Vin Diesel, but I mean, he could be in it. Not necessarily as Jack. I don't think the way Jack looks in the comics and the way I imagined him look nothing like Vin Diesel. But, you know, you could, if you want to get like a big name in there as a draw, you could throw him in there. It's like one of the poacher brothers or something. Like, you know, just he seems like he'd be familiar with this kind of scenario. I mean, heck, for all we know, the next Fast and the Furious movies could be this. Like, they could just be like, you know what, dinosaurs, whatever. I mean, they're getting that ridiculous anyway. Some people are talking about they might go into space. So, like, yeah, why not dinosaurs? All right, so what are we doing with the story here? Like I said, this episode is mainly about the world. And I feel like as a movie, it'd be more of like each movie would really just be like this big roller coaster thrill ride kind of thing. And I feel like the lore and stuff would be kind of playing out in the background, sort of like kind of how the Marvel movies do their world building kind of stuff, where, you know, there's bits and pieces here and there, but it's mainly about just like the cars, dinosaurs, and the chase scenes. Like, it's really that. Now, I'm not saying like that's all the comic is. There's more to it than that, but I feel like for a movie, that's your draw. And then you have your two leads with Jack and Hannah, and the world kind of grows out around them. You know, she shows up in the, like, I feel like it would start with her already in the city, in the sea, Manhattan. And she's there. She's like, I'm an ambassador. I'm a scientist. And, you know, we need your city to work with my city so we can, you know, get humanity back on track. And then you have Jack, who's an old blood, which is, you know, a mechanic, and their importance plays a role in this whole thing. And the adventure kind of goes from there. Like, you know, they're like, okay, we got to get these two cities working together. How do we do that? We've got poachers out here who hate Jack. You've got whatever that one Wilhelmina Strohhurst or whatever that character was, who, you know, mechanics are a hindrance to humanity. You have that going on. You have these lizard men out there. There's so many components where you could build a story around, but you don't have to cram it all into the first movie. That's what I mean. Like, as far as the MCU model, it's like you sprinkle bits of some of it in there, but you focus on like one or two of them. And I think for the first movie, you would probably focus more on the political aspect of it, with, you know, the governors or whoever runs each city, and the influence of the old bloods and their importance in this world. Like, you're gonna see that with, you know, like, hey, dinosaurs run really fast. We need cars, we need vehicles, we need working machines to keep humans alive. And I think for the first movie, you focus on that, but then also the moles, which are the group led by Wilhelmina, who feel like old bloods are a hindrance somehow. Like, I don't know how you make that a workable motivation, because it seems pretty clear that old bloods are important. I guess you could show that not all old bloods are like Jack, and some of them are like they put themselves above the greater good, I guess, since, you know, it's like, hey, I have all these skills that are important, but you know what, I'm gonna do, you know, I'm gonna charge like an arm and a leg just to repair like a refrigerator or something like that. Like, you know, you show some of them are kind of douchebag assholes. So maybe that's where Wilhelmina's like, you know, we can't give them too much power, because then, you know, even though they have the skills we need, it's like, you know, if we basically essentially make them kings, then, like, you know, society falls apart or something. I feel like there's a good story in that by itself. And then, like, movie two, you sprinkle in, like, you can have Jack mention these lizard men are out there or whatever, and maybe you see one of them or something. And then movie two is about those lizard men and how they can telepathically communicate with dinosaurs. And that's where you have the conflict being the poachers. Because in movie two, it's like the poachers are out killing dinosaurs, but it's like, well, there's these lizard men who are like an in-between who can communicate with dinosaurs. Maybe we make peace with them. We can make peace with dinosaurs, and we don't have to worry about getting our heads bit off every time we step outside of a city or something like that. So, you know, that's your movie two. And then movie three, maybe you introduce some weird new mutation of dinosaur that can't be talked to telepathically. That's just like berserker rampage monsters, like maybe not kaiju size or anything, but like, you know, something like that. I don't really have an idea for a third movie. Maybe for a third movie, you have, like, I don't know, like a war between some of the cities or something, and there's dinosaurs in between. Like, maybe someone found a way to weaponize the dinosaurs. Like, not weaponize, but, like, you know, they've captured a lizard man, and they figured out how to use them to control the dinosaurs and then mount weapons on them. But then you're talking about, like, a whole nother thing where, what was that old 80s cartoon about, like, the robot dinosaurs? I can't remember, but yeah, that's a whole different thing. But I mean, I guess you could do that if you wanted. Maybe not strap lasers to them or anything, but, like, you know, you'd use maybe there's a scientist in one city that nobody's been thinking about for a while, and he's like, hey, I captured this lizard man, we can use them, or like use some kind of machine and their DNA and their psychic abilities to control dinosaurs, and we can use the dinosaurs' weapons to attack other cities and take over or something. I don't know. Like I said, there's a lot of potential in here for these kinds of stories to grow out from this movie trilogy and then into a new comic series, maybe, or I guess maybe a anthology series or streaming TV series. But I really don't think that's a good idea, because it probably wouldn't have the budget and it wouldn't look as good or feel as good as like seeing it on a big screen as a movie or with some beautiful artwork in a comic. And that's also provided that if you do a comic, you get Schultz to come back, if not as the artist, at least as a consultant for the story, because, you know, this is his creation. I think he should be involved in some way, whether it be like a new comic series or like with the movies too. I think his input would be important for either of those two things. There are some great stories that could still be told in this universe via movie or comic. I think either of those would be great. I wouldn't object to either one. As far as, I guess, characters go, you could either continue where it originally left off, or you could do a time skip and jump ahead, and whoever your new artist writer team is, have them kind of just push that world forward a bit. And as far as the movies go, like I said, you start out with Jack, and that's your first trilogy, or that's your first movie, but that's where you introduce everyone to the world and set it up, and then after that, it's just, you could kind of do whatever you wanted. I mean, keeping in mind, we're dealing with Cadillacs and dinosaurs here. That's got to be in there. But other than that, you can make up new dinosaurs. You can start coming up with new ways to fight off dinosaurs, like sticking catapults on the back of the Cadillacs, or like putting electro wires around the Cadillac. Like, you could start making these things into war machines, but you definitely got to use real Cadillacs first of all, and then if you have people augment them or whatever, that's fine, but like, definitely borrow in air quotes the look of Mad Max Fury Road, because like, or just get who's the director, I forget his name, give me a second, George Miller, there you go, got it, I knew it would come to me. Just get George Miller to do this. I mean, I think he's working on the next Mad Max movie, or I think that, that's his current thing he's trying to get done, so he may not be available, but if you could get him, definitely get him, or someone who can kind of imitate his style. Oh, I mean, I guess you don't have to imitate it. Like, it doesn't have to be, Mad Max with dinosaurs necessarily, but like, I just love the way that movie looks so much that I think it would be a perfect look for this movie, or something similar in that vein. Like, that's what I'm seeing in my head when I think about it. So yeah, like, you're definitely gonna get at least three good movies out of that, and then you give it a break, and then you come back, and then you can introduce new characters, or, jump ahead. Like, I feel like this is a sustainable franchise. Even after the three movies, maybe that's when you do a TV series, because, it would have the fan base back by then. Like I said, if you're going to do TV, it's got to have a budget. It'd probably be on streaming somewhere, or you do the comics instead, I guess. Or yeah, so it could either be after the three movies, then you do the comic series or the TV series. And I think this world, like I said, this world has enough, there's enough in it where you can not only just reintroduce it, but you could build upon it. Like, this series, I don't think the series actually ever finished. Like, I don't think it's a series that really necessarily has an end. You can end it kind of anywhere and then start it up again. Like, I think it's due to come back. Like, just like I said, Google the artwork, and you'll see you'll kind of get an idea of like what a movie of this could look like and how awesome that could be. Like, and I feel like there's still a lot of questions. Like, has the world progressed or regressed since where the comic left off? Have newer, stranger creatures been discovered? Are humans developing mutations? Because there's those lizard men, but those might be like lizards who evolved, not humans who evolved into lizards. And how would that even happen? So you got that question. I think there's just enough there. Someone just needs to pick up the pen and get to work. Oh, and yeah, you probably need to secure the rights to the series too. But that's an obvious thing part of there. So if that sounds like the kind of stuff you'd be into, or something you'd like, that's the pitch. So let's talk trades. So the trades are trade paperbacks, as they're also known, the collections. If you want to actually read the comic book, here's what you're looking for. So there's Cadillacs and Dinosaurs from Kitchen Sink Press. This is collecting Xenozoic Tales number 1 through 4. And then the solo story from the Death Rattle Horror Anthology comic from their 8th issue. Then there's Dinosaur Shaman from Kitchen Sink Press. collecting Xenozoic Tales number 5 through 8. Then you have Time and Overdrive from Kitchen Sink Press collecting Xenozoic Tales 9 through 12. And I think that's all they had. Or you can go looking for Xenozoic Tales Volume 1 after the end from Dark Horse collecting Death Rattle Issue 8 and Xenozoic Tales number 1 through 7. Then they have Xenozoic Tales Volume 2, The New World, from Dark Horse, collecting Xenozoic Tales 8 through 14. Let's see, there's also Xenozoic from Flesk Publications, collecting the Death Rattle Issue 8 story, and Xenozoic Tales numbers 1 through 14. And I believe that's it. The good news is, if you type in Cadillacs and Dinosaurs into an Amazon search bar, you'll find it. You'll find all of it. It's not hard to find. So, you know, Google the art, maybe buy some of the issues and give it a read. I think it's worth it. Now, since this episode wasn't on a specific character, the pitch wasn't quite as focused. Usually it's like a character and I talk about how that character would be altered or changed or updated or whatever for a movie or a new comic or something. And I can get into a bit more detail, but this was kind of about an entire, like a series or a world. So it was a little bit harder to kind of focus it on specific changes, especially since for the most part I was kind of advocating sticking pretty close to the source material on this one, because it's a very specific and unique world. So that's kind of where this episode was a little weird, but I think it is due for a revival. I think it'd be worth bringing back. I think it's a cool concept. I think the Jurassic Park franchise as it exists is kind of tiring itself out. I don't think they pushed it soon enough. And I think if you drop that, because I think dinosaurs are cool. Dinosaurs are always going to be cool. Same thing with Cars. I mean, look at the Fast and the Franchise series. Cars are always awesome. Dinosaurs are always awesome. So yeah, I think you just drop Jurassic Park stuff. Stop trying to keep that alive and just do this. This is what Jurassic Park probably should have turned into a long time ago. But this already exists. It already has a better world set up for you already. Do this. This is where that kind of idea would go anyway. Like, do Cadillacs and Dinosaurs. That's your new blockbuster thing, as opposed to, you know, the Jurassic Park franchise limping along. Like, after the first one, that series was pretty much done anyway. Do Cadillacs and Dinosaurs. I haven't decided on the next episode yet. I've got a list going. If you have suggestions or questions about comic book characters that you want me to look up, I can answer at the start of episodes or whatever. You can reach me at comicoscurapod@yahoo.com. I didn't change the email. It's still the same. Don't forget to, you know, leave a comment, maybe give the podcast 5 stars, you know, 4 or 5, you know, leave a comment. If you're listening to it through iTunes, then you can leave a comment. I don't know how Spotify works yet. I think you can leave comments on that one. But the show is on iTunes. It's on Spotify, I think a couple of other places. And I think it should be popping up in other places too, if it's not there yet. So I'll look that up. I gotta see where else it's actually you can actually listen to it from, other than Spotify and iTunes. But once I get a full list going, I guess I'll list those two. But I don't know if anyone's listening to it through other means than those two. That's the show for this week. I guess I'm going back to the every 2 weeks kind of release schedule. I feel like that way I don't burn out quite as quickly, and I don't run through characters as quickly, because comic books have been around for a long time. So there's like tons of characters out there. Ones that are obscure that I know of, ones that I haven't found yet. But at the same time, you know, like let's not rush to the end. You know what I mean? So yeah, it'll be a every 2 weeks kind of thing. So it's basically like 2 episodes a month, I think. And I feel like that's probably for the better. It'll give me time to do research, time to find new characters to do, and kind of make sure that I don't get ahead of my list of characters and stuff like that. So that's it for this episode. I guess I'll see you in 2 weeks. And as always, don't be obscure.